Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 912. This episode brought to you by Squarespace. Beautiful templates created by world-class designers. Squarespace makes it easy to turn your idea into a new and unique website in just a few Jonas.
Am I a measure of time now?
You're a measure of time, Jonah.
I bet it's a long amount of time.
It's going to be very confusing to people because you're in this intro, but you're not actually in this episode. Squarespace also has analytics that are going to help you grow in real time. If you have a question, they have award-winning 24/7 customer support that's going to help you out. Think it, dream it, make it with Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use the offer code NERDIST to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Jonah Ray, do you have anything coming up that you want to promote?
I got nothing. When is this podcast coming out?
What are you, Matt Myra from 2 years ago?
Hey.
It's funny to say that now because he's busier than all of us put together.
Yeah, true. When is this coming out? Today? Tomorrow? Today.
Right now.
I'm hosting a benefit for 826 LA.
Oh, that's
which
great.
Which is a nonprofit aimed at doing free
for writers.
Creative writing classes for kids. And we're doing a half marathon in LA Historic Park. Go to 826LA.com for information on that. It's like a tiny little marathon, but there's like these little things you have to do along the way, like stack a book on your head. Like there's all these little challenges
you gotta
do throughout. And there's gonna be, food, music, there's beer and stuff like that. It's at LA Historic State Park. And so that would be a lot of fun.
What's the website for it?
826LA.com. I think it's like they have it on their front page there. And then in Los Angeles again, I'm going to be performing on a show with one of my favorite bands, Fart Barf.
Yeah.
Which is a great band. I highly recommend you guys check out Fart Barf.
Fantastic.
You'd like them. Real synthy, cool stuff.
Great.
But then also Harmar Superstar is on the show, and Honus Honus, which is Ryan from Man Man, and I'll be on that show as well. It's a bunch
fantastic,
of my buddies.
John Ray.
Oh, and then now we're reading Plan 9 from Outer Space.
For a guy who didn't have anything to promote.
These are just shows.
This is just like,
announce local things always feels weird, don't you think?
No, not at all. People want to know, where are you doing the Plan 9 reading?
At Largo. It's Dana Gould, Janet Varney, Ron Lynch, Matt Bronger,
Great.
A bunch of us, Laurie Newman. We've done it a few times. It's a lot of fun.
Great.
Yeah, I play, the main guy in Plan 9.
So I get to do that voice.
You get to do it. It's in the back.
It's in the back.
Yeah. Bruce Gutter?
Yeah, I basically do Bruce Gutter.
I love it. Bruce Gutter has been absent for a long time.
Yeah, I was in rehab. Rehab was in the back.
Rehab was in the back. Back Bay. It was up in Bodega Bay. Beautiful this time of year.
Katie, what else have we got from the Nerds community?
A Cincinnati soup kitchen and food pantry was recently robbed and had computers and bank info stolen from their offices. They serve over 1,600 people every week, so this very much affected them as they have to buy a lot of food. They set up a GoFundMe to help raise money, and any extra money that they raise will go towards buying food. So you can find that at GoFundMe.com/WHKitchen. And then Jordan Anderson writes, I just wrote and self-published my first book on Amazon. It's titled Life After. The best way to find it is to search my name, Jordan Anderson. It's a short novel taking place in a zombie-ridden Northeast Tennessee. And it's available as an ebook for $2.99 and paperback for
$9.99. Fantastic.
Oh, also, I started that other Instagram account for fun, Movie Shite.
Where you go around and just like Bela Lugosi died here.
Yeah. Just like I went to the Michael Myers house and I like old photos I find and this movie Shite was so that's shit with an E.
Yeah, I think people know.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of.
Yeah.
We know the shite.
It's fun.
We know what shite is.
Yeah.
You stupid bastard. We know what shite is. Jonah. This episode is the Duffer Brothers, Matt and Ross.
I was so bummed I couldn't make this
they
one.
They were great.
Yeah.
I hammered them a lot about Wayward Pines.
Oh, yeah?
It was a great show.
Yeah, yeah. I remember you liking
it. It was one
that.
Of those, like, you know, I don't think Fox really expected much from it, so they just like, I just put this out, I guess, and then yeah. It was a hit, and they were like, fuck. But by the time they realized that, Matt and Ross were already making Stranger Things.
Man.
But Stranger Things Season 2 comes out October 27th, so that's probably at like midnight Pacific time, I imagine.
Yeah, probably. So that means there's going to be people that have watched the whole thing and spoiled it by the time we wake up.
By the time you wake up, yeah, the whole thing is going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
When does the Demogorgon get to the fireworks factory? This episode also brought to you by Stamps.com. Stamps.com lets you buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer or printer. You just click, you print, you mail, and that's it. And it never closes. Print the letters or packages at your convenience 24/7, and then they're gonna send you a digital scale to calculate the exact postage you need. You're not going to waste a penny. And they're going to help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. You're even going to get discounts you can't get at the post office. Suck on that, post office. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Right now, enjoy Stamps.com with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist. That is Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. Never go to the post office again. Stamps.com. Never go. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 912 with the Duffer Brothers and not Jonah Ray.
Yeah, Duffer Britain, Duffer Man. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Thursday, the big premiere is Thursday.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah.
It's all crazy.
Well, I'm excited because we get to see it on a like a proper movie screen.
Oh,
which
right.
Which we haven't even done. Like, because last year it was they put this projector together. It wasn't like a real movie theater that we got to experience it. And so
what I'm was excited the about was that. The vibe last year? Like, did Netflix say this show's gonna be a hit, or were they like? We're gonna release this. Good
I
luck.
Think they do it. They treat this like every other show. They just like it's another dart they're throwing.
Right.
You know they really liked it, but no, I don't think they thought it was gonna.
No,
be
I think
big
the thing
hit.
Is that if they put this stuff out there, if it's you know a lot, you know, can find and hopefully we'll find an audience. They thought it was gonna take a lot longer than it did to find an audience.
Really?
That was the only difference. They said it, they thought word of mouth was gonna get the show a lot of fans. It was just gonna take some time. That's what we were told.
But they were very clear. They were like, there's not going to be marketing or blah, 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 blah.
Well, at least they were honest about it.
Months and months ahead before they'd seen the show.
But can you imagine if they did it for all their shows? I mean, it would only be Netflix marketing everywhere. They have so much content and so many shows.
I just read like this year, it was like they're going to put out 80 movies.
Jesus.
There's going to be one every 4.5 days or something.
Yeah, they did the same thing with stand-up.
I know.
They did the same thing where it was like, oh, wow, Netflix is a really amazing platform because it's one of the few destination platforms where people will actually go and see a homepage and get recommended. You know, it's like it's just different than the way people normally engage with entertainment. It's like those days are over. But Netflix had it. And then they were like, well, now we're going to do one special a week for 52. I was like, oh, that's a lot of specials. I mean, it's great. There's a lot of comedy, but I think it can be a little overwhelming sometimes for people
who
are like, oh, wait, there's like 10 other things just came out. You know, it's stressful.
I remember when season one came out, I didn't even see it as recommended for me on that list, you know, their algorithm. And I'm like, I made this for myself. How can it not be recommended
Netflix
to me?
Is like, you don't like your own work.
I know. I was like, if I can't find it, how's anyone going to find it? But
they did. Well, yeah, because it was one of the – oh, actually, look, someone gave me that VHS box at – see right there?
Yeah.
Right
Isn't
next to
cool?
Java.
I want them to actually put it out.
It's a Stranger Things VHS box.
Actually put it out on VHS.
I think it would have to come with
a VHS player. I said it would have to come with a VCR.
It would have to,
because people don't, you know, but I think it'd be fun.
I don't know if there's a tape in there or not. Someone gave that to me at Comic-Con last year.
Oh, there's not. Now they actually did put it out. Like, they put it out. The Blu-ray box looks like this. the Blu-ray release does look like this.
What's funny to me is that I think I had assumed that you were maybe a generation older than you are. But this, yeah. But it takes place before you were born.
Yeah, but we grew up on VHS.
Gotcha.
Right? That was like DVD was like a hard transition for me to make because we were in high school.
But that's what's interesting, I think, is that, and maybe part of what led to Stranger Things is that we fell in love with these movies on television screens.
Got it.
I didn't see E.T. theatrically. I mean, I'm bummed that I didn't, but I didn't see that. I didn't see Indiana Jones. I didn't see, you know, the original
you mean on
Star
the
Wars
screen.
On the big screen. Right. I didn't see it theatrically. And so I think that, so we, when we fell in love with these movies, it was on this tiny box of a TV and just sitting
But
on.
It didn't seem to, like, diminish the power of the movies at all.
Sure.
Like, I remember seeing, like, the double VHS Braveheart, I mean, tons of times, but it was like, it felt huge.
Right,
and
right,
I was watching
right.
it on a 10-inch television.
Because I can count the movies that like, when I was growing up that blew my mind, that made me want to do this. And some of them, like Jurassic Park, I did see on the big screen. But a lot of them, yeah, I remember watching Goodfellas. I rented it from the library, VHS. And it was mind-blowing. It blew my mind.
That's so I was funny like, that you can rent Goodfellas yeah, on VHS you can,
from
library.
The public library.
Wow.
Yeah, for free. That's, those were the days.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. But, when DVDs came out, I was like, I just felt like it didn't matter to me that the image was crisper because that was it. We were watching on really small televisions,
right?
And so the bar that
I remember
watching
Last Moment Deacon's DVD, yeah. And it's like,
well, if you're
sliver.
Watching with a 2:3:5, you know, aspect ratio on a small television, it's worse, frankly, than watching it on VHS.
Can I just backtrack a little bit and ask you some Wayward Pines questions?
Okay. Oh my god, okay,
because that was a show that sort of felt like. My wife and we were dating at the time when it came out.
Yeah.
Like, Wayward Pines, this looks really interesting. And fell in love with it immediately. Like, oh my God, this is great. But it felt like a limited run. It was like, okay, well, I guess Fox is maybe going to take their hand, like, True Detective style. Like, everyone's doing these limited run shows.
Yeah.
They got Matt Dillon. They got, you know, Carla Gugino. They got to assemble this cast. And they do this show. And then they put it out. And they were like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, people, we got to do something. I don't know if we were prepared for this.
Yeah, no, I don't. Well, that was a weird experience. Stranger Things would not exist were it not for Wayward Pines because we had no TV experience. And then we had one script that worked that we had written.
But
we read a bunch of scripts. And then it was like we were really into Shyamalan when we were growing up. And then it was sort of like an old school Shyamalan movie. And then so Shyamalan read it. At some point, somehow it was submitted to him, and he read it and liked it because we were ripping him off. And he likes his own work. He's like, I love this. I'm like, yeah, no shit, dude. we're trying to be you. And then so he then pulled us into that, and then that was really interesting.
Because we had this idea. We had the idea for Stranger Things because we were figuring out what the next project could be. And we had the idea, and we're like, no one's going to let us do TV. We have no idea how it works at all. And then it was about a week later. It's just one of those fluke things that, you know, they said, you know, you want to get on the phone with M. Night. And so and that ended up – we were supposed to just consult for a few weeks, and then we ended up being on the show – through it was like over 6 months, 7 months. It was just became what was supposed to be a 2 week job became a full time
job. And
that
was quite the cast because it was like Matt Dillon, Melissa Leo, Terrence Howard.
Yeah.
I mean, for like,
you're being thrown
we were
into
like,
the
that
deep
was
end.
Really the deep end in terms of working with these because we were this, you know, it was we learned a lot. Doing that,
and I think
we show how to work with actors,
and we came out of it, and we're like, I think we can. I think we know how to do this. We know.
I didn't feel like that at all. I just felt like it looked like maybe we could say that.
Well, people showed up. The thing is airing. It feels like we do.
You
had
well, you have the proper credit. You know, it was like somehow we got muscled our way into getting an EP credit, which is kind of what you need, and then. And use that to convince people.
Usually you have to go up through various writers' rooms to get up to the level that we needed to. But somehow on that one, you know, what we realize is amazing in Hollywood is if you tell people no, if they're offering you something like money or a job and you say no, then they'll – throw you more things. They go crazy.
Well, I think what happened was we were in the middle of shooting Wayward Pines. It was actually a really expensive show.
I'm sure it was.
And it was they didn't have in the writers were, and the actors were sort of rebelling, and they didn't have anyone who script they were liking, and they liked in Knight liked our stuff, so they had to have us. Right, and we were able to use that to get us.
I mean, the pacing of that show was really interesting because it was opposite. You know, a lot of shows, like, you know, True Detective, and I thought True Detective was great.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I totally was super jazzed at the ending. Like, oh, it's just a dude. Like, I just thought it was going to be like this.
What ending could be satisfying after all that build up? Though
I don't know. No, you're totally
the
right.
The journey was worth
some,
it.
Yeah,
no, I thought it was going to be at least supernatural or super science or something.
Yeah,
and then ultimately it was like, no, not really.
It's just a dude.
But he has a little bit of a vision, but I don't know if that really means anything. But you know, Wayward Pines. And I feel like when most shows or series like have the big idea, this is the big idea, they fucking hold on to it as long as humanly possible. But Wayward Pines, like four episodes in or five episodes
in. That's what drew us to it, because they sent us the first five. I couldn't believe that they gave the twist away at four. That was Chad Hodge, I think, the creator of that, who did that. I don't know if it was him and Blake Crouch who wrote the books.
But it was bold that they just...
Here it is. This is what this is. This is all this craziness. And then you're like, wait, what? What? You know? And then
it's bonkers. Yeah,
it is bonkers. But you didn't have anything to do with season two, I imagine.
No,
you were probably doing Stranger Things.
We were doing Stranger Things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, because season two, they were like, well, how do we?
I haven't seen it. Yeah.
Where do we go from? Well, it's just dealing with the aftermath of everything you learn in season one. It's just I'm motioning so you understand what this means. But people who haven't seen it yet, it's not spoiled, but it just takes place in a different time.
Yeah.
And they're just dealing with all the stuff. But by that point, when you finished Wayward Pines, you had just decided, well, we're only going to work on this for one season anyway.
Yeah, we kept trying to go to do Stranger Things because we had the idea. And so we just got – Wayward Pines ended up taking a lot more time than possible. But the good thing about that is we had some money, and we're like, now we can spend a few months develop this show. And it did take a while because it was really from summer, and we didn't sell the show until February. So it was like 6-7 months of just – a lot of it was us developing it on our own. Eventually, we brought in Sean Levy and Dan Cohen and 21 Laughs, but that was months into the process. We had the season arc, we had a lookbook, we had the first script, and so we had a lot of it figured out.
But that was Wayward Pines. Provided us a platform to learn. Like, we learned how to do television, and then it also, it gave us the financial means to just like take off.
And more than that, we always months. Even Hidden, which was our first script, was it took us, you know, it's 100 pages, and it took us 7 months or something to write. And then Wayward Pines, they're like, we're going to start shooting next week. You need to get us something. And the gun to our head was actually the best thing for us, because we're, you know, a little obsessive compulsive, and we get caught on things and we go in loops. And it was just, it forced you to let go of that and just go, okay, I'm just sort of vomiting this out, and you just start going. And that is the great thing about TV, is that you can't overthink it. You have to just keep pushing forward, which for us, I think, was a very healthy thing, because we can just get stuck in cycles for a very long time.
But it was
time.
Cool, because you're like writing stuff, and then like a week later, you see dailies with Melissa Leo, you know, delivering those lines you wrote, and you're like, okay. And then you start to figure out really quickly what's working and not,
right,
what's translating and what's not translating. It's like, oof.
But I think it was funny, because this on season two, we had Andrew Stanton direct two episodes, and to him, animation is even more extreme than movies in that it takes forever.
Oh yeah,
to see that come to life. Whereas this was quite the opposite for him, and he loved it, just because you're producing something, you're immediately seeing the results of it. It's so fast.
Whether it works or not, I mean, you're seeing it. You know what I mean? And then you can't tinker with it. But much like animation, the process of it. The more I'm learning about it, I don't. It's still a very foreign process to me.
Well,
how animation works, but they just redo it over and over and over.
Well, they do, but also, it's almost like the pre and post production processes are flipped where it's like you're doing a lot of pre stuff in animation,
right?
That you would do in post for a regular,
that's right,
for you know, if you're shooting live action, but also that idea of you know, someone with an animation background, I mean, I'm an animation nut.
Yeah.
And I think it's such an incredible, because it uses so many disciplines, and I think someone, you know, like Brad Bird or anyone who knows how to tell a story and weave all of those things together is probably a pretty good live action storyteller.
Absolutely, for sure. Because like, so we found out Andrew was like, he called the producer Sean Levy and said, you know, he'd be like to direct a couple episodes.
We
were like,
I don't know.
Let me think about this. What's I'll get done? Back to you. And we're I mean, we jumped at the chance. So it was like, it was amazing. So it was really cool. And he storyboards everything.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So, but we weren't really there when he was shooting. So I, most of what I learned about what Andrew did, I learned from talking to our actors. But I mean, they're like little doodles almost. But it's like very precise.
What is the when you say you came up with a pitch for Stranger Things? I'm so curious to know what the show was initially in your head.
We had a pitch, but like we had a lookbook thing, and then we had a fake trailer.
It's
we
very
made.
Close to what it ended up being, except that originally it was just going to be one season, but it was the same. Eleven was going to sacrifice herself. It was going to be sad, but they would save the world, and that was what it was going to be. Until we realized no one actually wants. Apparently, no one can make money off of these limited series.
Well, I mean, no, that's true. They can't.
It was a fad. When Wayward Pines, it was a fad.
Right.
And then it sort of phased.
Because they realized and it makes sense. You put all this money and resources into building up this brand, and then if it's a success, you're like, never, we're not doing it again.
Yeah, which is why, you know, with True Detective, they're like, okay, well, let's just get another cast. Yeah. All right, let's just try that. Yeah. We'll just try that again. Please come back. Please, everyone, come back, please.
But it's hard. You have to build. You're building a whole new world again. Whereas they, you know, so that's. So anyways, that was the biggest change. And then other than that, I mean, I remember I looked back at the pitch in the document to see how close we were after season one had come out. And I think the biggest thing is that the kids and the personalities of the kids that we ended up casting changed the course of the season a little bit, and Winona changed it. And I think actually it's a little bit lighter than was originally intended. It was more R-rated when the first pilot script. And part of that was us just making sure everyone in the industry knew if they read this is not a kid show.
Right.
And it's not intended for kids. So we had, you know, F-bombs, and we had – the violence was much more gruesome and extreme. But otherwise it's – we just went through that pilot script and just took out some language and just took some blood out, and that was it. Otherwise, it's very similar to what was.
It was intended. It was so well cast, and there are definitely shades of it with it. And Finn being in it too, who's great.
I know, he's amazing.
Just like super. You know, we went to the It premiere, and I was with some friends, and we chatted with him and some of the people who were in it. And I think what's great about that and Stranger Things is that there is a real authentic sense of the kids don't look like kid actors.
Right.
They just look like kids.
I know.
They looked like your friend group. And I played D&D before you were born. and so that was exactly when you're watching this going, oh my God, this is fucking exactly what it was. This is how kids talk. This is how they interact. This is how they reason with the world. This little sort of nerdy bunch of kids is how they they use this fantasy world to process. And what an amazing idea to say, oh, what if the fantasy world were at – what if it was actually a real campaign was what I always wanted when I was a kid.
But that's why all those movies and the Stephen King stuff connected with us, because it was like you saw yourself or like – I mean obviously the classic is the Goonies, but it's like that – it felt so much like us and our friends, the way they were talking over each other. It's funny because Sean – Aston was in this year, so I asked him a lot about the Goonies and stuff, and he's like, the first time he saw it, he didn't like it because he was like, I can't understand what they were talking over each other constantly, and it drove him nuts. I know it drove that editor Michael Kahn nuts, because they were just it was chaotic, but that's how it was. I mean, that's how, because it's when we saw it when we were kids, we thought that's, we still do it now. We still talk over each other. You can notice.
Technically twins.
We're allowed to, right?
Yeah.
But but it felt so real and so authentic. And then they go on this extraordinary adventure. And then it's like, you're part of that. You're pulled into it to such a degree. And so and Stephen King did the same thing. I mean, I didn't read, I saw the miniseries It before, because I saw that. Like a lot of kids, that traumatized. I feel like when people talk about the success of that movie, people forget how many kids saw that miniseries. Like it was a huge event in my life growing up. Like, because I was like, I did a slumber party with like 20 of us, and it And it scarred me from like big time. It is funny though. I was introduced to Stephen King through movies and through TV. And then when I was younger, like when I was in elementary school, and then I started reading him a little older when I was in middle school and high school.
Well, it's really, you know, like sci-fi and fantasy are hard, and horror is hard because, you know, when you look at your show, there are so many points where it could have not, like, any, if there was any little joint that was out of place, if the creature design wasn't on tap, or if the sort of the gateway didn't look right or anything, then it just completely unravels all of it.
Yes. No, and you're freaked on set. You're freaked out.
Well, because you have a guy with a rubber suit, and 90% of the time it looks terrible. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, it looks. There are dailies that are just embarrassing.
It is. It also is amazing though, because they're controlling this the Demogorgon's mouth. So it's like all the petals are controlled individually. It's super. It's all the stuff you dream about when you're a kid, having access to. But if it's done and filmed in the wrong way, it just looks. It's very. You feel very vulnerable in a way. And then you have, especially season one. You know, you have these actors like Winona and stuff, and David, and everyone's on edge a little bit because no one knows. There are days when no one knows if this is working or not. But eventually, at the end of the day, you're in it together, and everyone sort of trusted the process. And then by the end of the season one, I think we all felt, you know, very connected to it in a way. But it was scary.
It is scary.
It's scary.
When you have a guy in a rubber suit, you have Winona talking to a ball of Christmas lights, and there's this is a fine, it's
and
a fine line.
Shooting it.
And also, you know, there are edits. I mean, you can see it, and it doesn't work. You know, So it's scary. You know, it is. You know, it is. It's tough. It was scary. But
I
really
hope you saved the rubber suit.
Oh, we
as a person who collects, my wife and I collect like props and stuff. Oh, yeah. As someone who collects those things, you need to save that rubber suit. It's going to, I'm telling you.
It smells, though. I mean,
it doesn't matter.
Pretty...
Put it in a box. Let it smell in your garage, man. Someone's going to fucking pay like $100,000 for that someday. You need to hang on to that. That's a part of, I mean, it is a part of television history. And particularly, and I'm going to be really extra passionate about this, in an industry with a lot of CG, having a real thing that was in something is a commodity. It's rare. It's like it's not that common anymore.
No, and not many people can even do it. It's like a skill. It's like a skill that's being lost.
Yeah,
I mean, in models is another one. That's just
we haven't shot a model yet.
It's apparently ridiculously expensive, especially now, just because so few people can actually do this.
Chris Nolan shot with models. I think, didn't he, for Interstellar?
Yeah, he's got a couple $100 million.
It helps if you have that kind of money to shoot with models. We'll talk to Netflix.
Yeah,
I'm sure. At this point, you throw your weight around.
It's hard though, because then you know, the funny thing is shooting season one, it's like we did fall in love with. I understand why these filmmakers fell in love with CG though, because it can do exactly what you want it to do.
Yes, I know, but we're still not quite there yet. I mean, like,
no,
I think the perfect is a balance of practical with a little bit of with a little CG sheen to just like smooth out the edges or just add a little bit, you know, like a little bit of animation.
Well, I just watched Alien Covenant. and yeah, that's exactly what you don't want.
It was full CG.
Yeah, it destroys it.
It's hard to, because you don't watch it and you go, you never watch full CG and go, wow, that's amazing. You go, oh, that's all right for CG, you know? We're just not, and there are amazing CG artists out there. I'm not shitting on it as a craft, but it just, the technology just isn't quite there yet. I mean, even Avatar, there's a little bit of forgiveness in Avatar. And that's like the best CG ever. So,
but they're doing some, I mean, the Planet of the Apes movies, like, they're doing some amazing.
They really are doing,
I mean, that is some incredible. I mean, occasionally you see something, you just go, I can't tell if that's what that, how they achieve that, and that, so it is, it's getting,
I think,
better.
They just trained some apes to talk.
They've gotten fur down. They've like nailed
fur.
Yeah, but it was interesting. We have more CG this year, and it is interesting. I mean, it is sort of in a lot of ways it is like and that was one of the things we were like, oh, we want to learn more about visual effects, and it is sort of like practical effects, in that it can be really good or really bad depending on how you shoot it. So you actually have to shoot it and edit it right. So, I mean, I think I'm mostly really happy with how it turned out. I mean, some of it, you know, it's, you know, you, it's, you know, we're learning, but you have to shoot it right.
But also, you know, it must be very exciting, but also terrifying that, you know, when you make something, when you make the first of something, you don't exactly know what's going to work. You just have all these ideas and then stuff works. And I'm sure there are some things that you go, oh, okay, I guess this worked. We thought it would be this, but it's this other thing. And then season two.
Right.
And you're like, shit, how much? Because I feel like audiences, they want two different things simultaneously. It's like, be different, but the same, you know? Don't be too same different, but be different the same, you know? It's like, so how do you know?
No, we were just talking about
Because we were just reading these reviews, and it is hard. That is the line that is really hard to hit. And we're even talking about – we just today we started talking season three, and it's like how – if you're too different, people feel jarred and they feel taken out of it. And if you're too similar, they go, we don't – you know, and I'm the last person. I don't want Home Alone 2. It's right. Like you don't want that. And obviously Cameron is the best, and he's almost doing like a – he's taking the same thing and he's changing the genre just a little bit.
Right.
And I think that he's the master of it, but otherwise it's difficult.
Well, I want to see what he does. He's got like four more sequels. Yeah. You know,
see if he is truly the master. Although I don't know why anyone at this point would doubt him.
You can't bet against him.
Why would you doubt him?
Can't bet against James Cameron.
I'm not going to doubt
Cameron.
No, it's – you know, yeah. He takes two swings and he hits them out of the park. He's two for two.
But both times, everyone was like, this is going to be a monumental disaster.
This is going to be ruined. Yeah. Oh, he's lost his fucking mind.
So Avatar 2 doesn't sound particularly exciting to me, but on the other hand, I'm going to assume it's going to be pretty something special.
I mean, it's going to be amazing, but even if it's...
He waits so long, too, that he's able then to do something incredible with technology that we're not even aware of right now.
That's the genius of him. I mean,
if you wait 10 years.
He pushes that. he combines, you know, very classic, simple storytelling. Like, people knock Avatar, but I like, you know, for the story. But I think that's why it became as big as it is, because it's very basic, simple storytelling combined with cutting edge.
Well, in a Justice League world, where I was like, wait, who's this? What are they? How are they? Okay, so what's everyone trying to do? You know, it's
it gets very muddled.
It gets very muddled when you're trying to keep track of like nine storylines. So yeah, I think
I like the simplicity of it combined with these incredible effects. I think it's cool, but I don't know what he's going to do. For that seems. But maybe I don't know. I'm really interested to see. Yeah.
Well, now you have those studios that are just announcing like, hey, there's a thing you don't exactly know what it is yet, but we're going to make six of them. You're like, well, just make one good, and then we'll see if there should be six of those.
That's right. Exactly. That's a mistake. I mean, you know, it's like Lucas makes Star Wars. He has some dreams of what it could be, but really he just made one good movie.
Yeah.
And they've built an entire multi-billion-dollar franchise off of that one good movie. But you need that. You need that really good base, or it's not going
to
work.
And you also need to be able to inspire other really creative people to come in, you know, like for Empire to come back and go, what if we did this, you know? And like really bring it's almost like the first season is almost – or the first movie in a franchise, successful franchise, is almost like a beacon that calls all the other, you know, Andrew Stantons of the world to come out and go, hey, wait a minute. I think I could provide something.
Can I play in this sandbox?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So in a way, you're just, you know, it's almost like you're sending out the flair and all these creative people are coming to try to, you know, bring what they have to it.
Exactly.
Is Stranger Things about friendship, or is it a sci-fi, or is it an adventure? Like, what do you think it is? Like, what is? I'm so curious
all
to know what
above,
you think it is.
All of the above. I mean, that's what that is why I'm kind of like falling in love with TV. You know what you can do with it, with like these long when you're basically doing a movie, but you have anywhere from 8 to 10 hours or whatever you know to tell it, and that you get to explore so many different things. Like, because the canvas is so big, so that's why it's hard for me to even be excited about. Even though we grew up not really watching TV and only watching movies, but it's hard to
And yet you're not making a movie.
I know, but that's everything's changing. You know,
do you want to make a movie or do you not want to make
no,
like a 90
minute? No, I don't really have an interest in it anymore. I mean, thinking about it, but I mean, what appeals to me about movies is that you can like build this perfect 2-hour structure and you get all these incredible resources in terms of like you get so much more money.
Right.
You know, but But I like that. I like these long form stories, and I think that this that what Netflix is doing and what some of these companies are doing is more exciting right now than what the traditional studio system is.
Regardless of what it is, I think what's exciting now is that, and this is very new, which is that you can come up with an idea and you can go how. It's like if you're writing a novel. Novelist isn't like I have to write 120 pages. They come up with a story and they go, how long is this story? And it could be 6 hours, it could be 20 hours, it could be, and then you know places like Netflix and now there are a lot of other places too offer a home for those stories. So you don't have to get. You used to have to be boxed in on for network television. You have to do this many a year, and they have to have, you know, you have to have a commercial. It's very specific. A commercial break. Every so and so minutes, and it's very precise.
Even Wayward Pines was that we had to build.
And same with feature
breaks.
Films. I mean, you can't really. I mean, yes, of course. Occasionally, there's like a 3-hour movie that pushes it, but generally, they're all around the same length. And so now, it's exciting to me that there's you have storytelling possibilities.
I was reading some interview with Fincher. You know, he's talking about. I guess it was a Mindhunter thing, and he was saying that he doesn't feel like. In the studio system, he's like, you have to stay in their lane, and it can be fun. But if you want to do anything with any sort of character work in it, you can't be working
like
the studio system.
If two people sitting in a car for 5 minutes talking, if that's revealing interesting things about their characters, that's great. But you don't have time for that in a 2-hour movie. Even a Fincher movie, you don't have time for it. So, but I love Mindhunter. I love that you get to spend time with these characters and see how they evolve over, you know, 8 hours. It's fantastic.
But yeah, to me, it's like when I started to really notice it with True Detective, which is when you start to, you know, you have a shorter, you know, season for TV, and then you have really cinematic directors coming in, and to me, it started to elevate this medium.
It is nice because I don't think any movie in the theater needs to be 3 hours long. You sit through a 3-hour movie, you're like, you could have cut out like 35 minutes of that. You know,
yeah.
It didn't need to be that long, and it really television and especially cable and especially, you know, video on demand, which Netflix is,
yeah,
really was smart enough to say like, hey, look, our medium's a little different, but we're going to allow you the creative freedom to really explore and that
right.
and it was really smart because right. all the people who felt confined by other platforms and other big studio systems were like, great, I'll just go make my weird thing over there, and guess what, there's an audience for like yeah. your weird thing.
Oh, you're exactly right. That is how they drew talent. You're right. I didn't think about that. But that's because for a while it was like, why would you want anything on Netflix?
I mean,
there's nothing appealing.
It was not that long ago that Netflix was just the red envelope that came that you would, oh, I could just drop this DVD in the mail and I don't have to go to the store.
So, but that's how it's interesting because that's how they developed. They realized about that binging was something that was going to work because they started to notice that the turnover rate on television shows was much, much greater. People were turning them over much faster than they were movies.
Right.
And movies would sit. You know how when you would do Netflix, I would have these movies sit out. They would get so dusty. You know what I mean? Especially that they call them like the well-intentioned ones.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like Schindler's List. They'll right. just sit there for
yeah.
2 years.
Right. I'm going to watch
this. Because no one can work.
This weekend, we're going to watch this.
We're
going to
watch
promise.
It. And then, I'm just not.
A stressful
not,
day.
Yeah,
oh, not, I just got Firefly. Yeah. Let's just watch that.
But exactly. The shows, like the Breaking Bad or whatever, they were turning over rapidly. And so I mean I remember I had the three DVD deal or whatever it was, and I figured out a way to do it where I could get it instantaneously.
Okay.
Like if I was watching a season, I could finish one, turn it over, by the time I started finish the next two discs, another one would
you
be
had it in the mail.
In the mail. It would be a perfect cycle.
Do they even send? They must still send DVDs.
Yeah,
they send
I don't
DVDs?
Do it, but
I haven't either. I haven't thought about it in ages.
No.
I just forgot. I just complete. This technology moves so fast.
But there was a time when they saw this and not everyone did, including me, and they made that shift and they're like, now our DVD service is called something different, and I was
right.
so upset because I was not ready.
It
yet.
Was too fat. That's the thing about something different. It was too. They tried to change. You remember that? It was like a whole like crisis at Netflix.
Fucking
it was
lost
like,
their minds.
Yeah, yeah. What was it called? Like Quick Flicks or something?
Yeah. Something. People were not.
It was like
enthused.
The one like small misstep that they made, and they quickly corrected it. But it was like big because they knew what the future was before anyone else did.
But also, sometimes though, when people flip out about something, if you're confident enough in what you're doing, you just go, just give them a minute.
Yes.
It's just this little hump they need to get over emotionally because no one likes to change their habits.
No.
And then after a bit, then people just
whenever a website changes, right? Whenever like a like the design changes, everyone right. always loses their shit.
Where they change this font, like it's exactly the same. You don't. Nothing has changed. This is not. This is Helvetica, and it was Arial Black, but yeah. Like you fucking. It's the same thing.
It takes them like 2 days though, and then they're over it.
Then they're
every
over
time
it.
Facebook makes a change, it's like the world is ending. And,
but that's all the time though, isn't it? It's just like I feel like they're just changing yeah. all the time. Like, well, your news feed's this now, and yeah. here's this, and this moved over here, and now this is over there, and it's still impossible to delete this ever.
Exactly.
You're never yeah. getting away from yeah, this yeah. ever. Have you talked to other? Have you thought about other platforms for storytelling? Is anything else exciting to you, or you're pretty locked in?
Well, we talked about and we made the decision that we wanted to see this show through just because we're so intimately involved in every aspect of it. And so it feels like, oh, we should just finish telling this story.
5 seasons, 8 seasons, 10 seasons?
Oh, my God. No. We always said 4 to 5, you know, it's kind of our
I think we'll know more because we're starting season 3. We'll know if this is the, you know, penultimate or there'll be a couple more after it. And then... So we'll figure it out sooner rather than later because I do think we know where we're going. We just don't know how long it's going to take to get there. But I do think you run the risk of straining credibility a bit with this story and these characters.
Right.
The minute I don't believe that they're still in this town and dealing with this, I mean, how often can you go? It's like, oh, it's another year. This weird thing's happening again.
Well,
could it be something supernatural? Well, that's the danger that it gets. So you just have to figure out a way to make sure the story stays. I believe these characters.
That's why it's hard. Like that's why it's hard for like Buffy season 7. You're like, well, they've already. You're like, yeah. Well, they just live above hell. All right, you know, it's like they just because you have to up the stakes every season,
yeah.
and it always has to be like. The worst thing they've ever, you know, it's you just level up like a video game.
Exactly.
So it's like it's just boss battle, boss battle, boss battle.
But at some point it gets ridiculous.
At some point it's like they're fighting God, you know. It's like how do you get any? Like, what
exactly.
Do you, they're battling the universe. Yeah.
But like something like Game of Thrones, I mean, they can sustain that for much longer, even though they are going to end it.
But that has a definite goal of
it
like
does.
Someone's going to get but, the throne, and like it's just how do you get there?
But they have so many world. I mean, basically different parts of the world that they can explore, whereas, you know, we have one small town.
It is like Star Wars in a way, Game of Thrones, in that they have now, you know, Westeros, they have an entire universe, and they can explore any time.
Yeah, they can, but I'm telling you, I still think that the way Game of Thrones should end is that Tyrion Lannister, like, walks out and gets on the subway at Westworld, and then you just find out it was all a robot simulation.
Don't give HBO ideas. They're going to want to do that.
No, they won't, because if they did, a lot of like the Game of Thrones fan, it would be an apocalypse. Like the Game of Thrones would light the world on fire, the fandom of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
If they were just like, oh yeah, these are all robots. We were like, what the? I mean, you think people get mad about fonts? Like, imagine what happened.
Man, that's a
when
pretty
you start
good
fucking
idea.
With
that
their
is,
fan
like, that's kind of blowing my mind.
Isn't that? Wouldn't that be great? There's no reason. Westworld, Westeros, it's our fucking right there. Come on, guys. Come on, HBO.
We have a small version of that, which is that I think, like, in Predator, as fans have brought up, there's, like, the guy that they go, Arnold and stuff, goes searching for is named Hopper. And he's like,
Jim.
It's Jim Hopper. And he's, like, all skinned and killed by the Predator. So that's our version of that, that Stranger Things is just one elaborate, very elaborate Predator prequel.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That at the end of the show, Hopper's just someone's, because I believe he's hunting monsters now, right? So the government's like, hey, you need to go to the jungle to deal with this alien thing, and he gets killed, and that's it.
But you know, that ties you also into the Alien universe, too.
Great, let's do it. Let's call a Fox up.
You've now.
We can help with their alien franchise.
AVPVD, the Demogorgon, is like the. Then they all just gotta fight each other.
That's it. There we go. Anyways, that's where we're headed. That's where Stranger Things is going.
Yeah.
Well, that's where it is. It's like, you know, the sequel's like, okay, we got to take it to a nut. So it's like, just like you said, Home Alone 2, lost in New York.
Exactly.
Then next would have been Europe.
Yeah.
Then you got to go to space. And then I don't know where you go after space.
Space is always the last. Isn't Call of Duty going to space now?
I think
they're
so,
running. Yeah. That means you've really run out of ideas.
There's nothing. There's no other place on Earth we can possibly go.
That's right.
We no other to time to. Space. No other war to explore. We're out of it. No other war with guns. We've got to go to space.
Was there anything in the show that you really wanted to do that just either wasn't achievable because of technology or just like story wise? You were like, oh, I love this idea, but you know, we just sometimes just got to cut shit out.
Hmm.
Well, season one, there definitely was more just because we had a more limited schedule. And so we just weren't. And that's what we fought for season two, is just to include all those little ideas that maybe you wouldn't have time for to explore those little nooks and crannies.
Yeah, we like Lucas infiltrating the government lab and all this fun stuff. And then, you know, the line producer looks at the schedule and goes, you're out of your mind. but we were able to do a lot, and then some things like the bike chase and stuff that we weren't able to, some sacrifices you make where you're just not able to shoot that. A lot of that was almost entirely second unit.
And so this season we just try to make sure that for that stuff we were there. I mean, so that when looking back on season one or whatever, those were sort of the stuff that we went, we wouldn't have cut that scene and we wouldn't have done this.
But more season one, it was actually figuring out structural, how do you structure something with this, this eight hour storyline. And so, when something's that long, you're going to make a lot of mistakes. So you're trying to, with season two to rectify those much as possible. And then you make new mistakes.
But your new and innovative mistakes.
Yeah.
But your show has a very special thing, which not a lot of binge watch shows have, which is because having been front row for Walking Dead for so long, it's like, oh yeah, it's all parsed out. People have to take the journey, so they talk about it for months and months and months.
Yeah,
as it's happening. But then you binge watch something, you're like, ah, and then you don't talk about it again. Stranger Things just happened to be one of those things that people memed and talked about, and that's not very common binge watching. But it must have been really interesting to be able to see, like, right away, like, oh, wow, there's a real outcry for Barb. You know what I mean?
Oh,
it's like,
yeah, it was
to
cool.
See you, which in your mind is like, okay, well, this is just a thing that happened to a character. But the audience gets to tell you immediately, this is what we're paying attention to.
Oh, yeah, it was really wild. I mean, yeah, people, because it takes forever to make this. I mean, it took us a year and a half both times, right, about?
Yeah.
And so, and then people have finished it in a night, and they have... And they have strong opinions about it, but that's the other. They really then also want the turnaround faster because you know this is something, a show that would be spread out on a traditional network over a couple months.
Would you have preferred that?
It would buy you time. No, but it would buy us more time. I think we need to start conditioning people to wait longer for television seasons, because that's the only frustrating thing I found about television that I want to change. And I've seen some other showrunners and stuff, talk about it and complain about it. It's like, now there's this expectation for, really movie quality work in terms of, especially in terms of the technical aspects of it and in terms of the visual effects and all of that. But everyone wants it turned around. Even the networks, Netflix, HBO, they want it turned around on a traditional television schedule.
Right.
So they want it within a year, which is just impossible.
You
want
to get it back to Cameron time.
I want to get... No, but people wait a couple, two and a half years for sequels. And the only reason we can't do that is because of, Netflix would kill us, and also our kids are... our kids are growing up, so that puts a little gun to our head, and that we can't take but so long. But even the Harry Potters, were they a year or between? No, they were over a year between those releases.
It was a little. I don't know if it was. I don't know if it was quite yearly.
It wasn't on an annual cycle until
but
the
it
last
was close.
Two. Until the last two, where they shot them back to back.
Right.
That was the only way they got
up.
It on an annual cycle. So we're like, we have the, and like in season two, we have the number same number of effects. I mean, over the course of like 9 hours that a big budget, visual effects movie would have, but spread out over 9 hours. But then, we have maybe like one sixth of the time post production schedule.
But that's just, I mean, that's also technology. Like, everyone expects, consumers now just expect, like, I want it right away, and you better fucking revolutionize, but not be too revolutionary.
Yeah.
I want it to be familiar, but revolutionary.
Yes.
And I need it, and I want it now, and I want to just sit here, and then I want you just to scoop it into my mouth. You know,
exactly.
It's like,
as fast as possible. But
well, I want my dragons in Game of Thrones, but now, especially having done more visual effects in season 2, like when I watch the new season, I'm like, my lord, that took a lot of time to do that. It just takes a lot of time, and it's great and it's fun, but it's not something that can happen overnight.
Well, those battle sequences, because I'll watch and I'll go, oh my god, how did they do this? And then I watch all the behind the scenes stuff, and then I go, oh yeah, it's just incredibly difficult, which makes me feel better, but also it starts raising the bar for what's expected out of TV. And I love that. I love that when you start to marry these big budget movie style visual effects sequences with really strong character work. Like, that to me is like really exciting. That's one reason I like TV, because if you're going to do, because I love all the big budget spectacle stuff, mm-hmm. but then you don't end up, you're not invested at all usually in any of the characters, because they don't take the time anymore. But what's cool is like the idea of taking some of these amazing tools that they've developed and then and applying them to these TV shows like Game of Thrones did, so that these characters are in this incredible, visually spectacular battle, but you're very invested in everybody who's in that battle. Like when I saw Battle of the Bastards, I was like, oh wow, this is like next level stuff. And so that's why I'm so excited about like basically big budget TV. That's to me the cool thing right now.
What would you guys have done? Because it feels like you're still pretty young, and it still feels like, oh, your TV career just came out of the, just shot out of a cannon.
All right.
And everything happened really fast. It might not feel that way to you, but...
No.
But what do you...
No. Yeah, no, because it was like 8 years of, like, failure, pretty much.
But what are you failing at in that 8 years? Like, what do you think you're failing at?
We had our first break, which was a... I mean, first it took a while to get something going. Then we had a first big break, which is a movie at Warner Brothers, a script that we had written. And we were like, oh, we've made it, And then they just ended up, and you spend 2 years on it, and then they just dumped it. And so that was hard, because you went from feeling like, we're doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing, exactly what we wanted to be, or exactly where we wanted to be. And then they just bury it.
That sucks.
You can rent it on Amazon now. No one knows it exists, mm-hmm. really. So that was really hard, because you put as much time and effort into that as we did. Stranger Things is called Hidden.
Oh, and that's very appropriate.
Exactly. As much into Stranger Things, into that as Stranger Things, except nobody seemed to really care or like it that much. So it is good to fail, because... then when you do have a success, we definitely know what the other side of that feels like. I don't know. And but we it was funny that was fun because we were at Warner Brothers, and this was a while ago. It's like Guillermo del Toro was next door to us editing Pacific Rim.
Oh wow.
And so we got to know Guillermo a little bit, and he's like the funniest guy, but he kind of helped us out of our depression.
Oh,
he was like,
nice.
"Don't worry, you guys." Like, he's like, "Nobody's going to turn the faucet off."
I think that is the greatest fear, more than like, "Oh, this story didn't connect with people like I wanted to." I mean, it's a bummer, but it's more of that fear, especially when you're starting off. Of you just don't want that faucet to get turned off. And
well,
that's
you want
the
people to continue to allow you to
tell your story,
make stuff, because it's a real privilege, because this stuff just costs so much money. And so, especially when you're starting out, you definitely don't want your first thing to not work. And that's kind of what happened with us. So it took us after that. It was about that, and then led to Wayward Pines. And then
we slowly dug
ourselves out of this.
Well, and I think that we were only able to because we may have been able to have a career as writers, but we were only able to dig ourselves out of the directing hole just because there was a sudden in very clear need, and we saw this, which is one reason we moved to TV. There was a need for content in the television space, a very desperate need for it. And so we were just there. We just raised our hands, and we're like, "We'll help. We'll help fill that."
Well, yeah, we took advantage of that. I mean, so you know, I mean, and so I mean, that's like Netflix and these companies were expanding really, really rapidly, and there wasn't enough stuff.
And I remember feeling we thought there was no chance in hell Netflix would ever do would ever do this show, because at the time it was like, you know, I remember going, you know, they have Fincher and they have Jinji Cohen. These are very established people. They didn't have a lot like they do now. And then what we realized is after they bought our show, we felt very special, but we were just the beginning of what was just a massive buy-in and all this content.
What was it? Yeah, it was like – that was like Netflix phase one. I'm making this up, but it feels like – it's not like they talked to me about any of this, but I feel like Netflix phase one was like, let's like really put some money, like put our chips on and spend a lot of money on very talented, established people like Jinji Cohen and David Fincher, and they knocked it out of the park for them. And then phase two was, okay, let's start taking, you know, some riskier bets.
Right.
And so, like, we were one of those.
Because it's not even a huge risk for them. Worst case scenario is they have more content on their site for our consumers. Like, it's not – it was a bit of a risk, but not to the extent of a studio film where you're having – and this is where we run into a problem with our first film. You spend $10 million on it, and that's not a – that's – piddly. That's nothing to somewhere like Warner Brothers. You spend $40 million to release it and put it out. Then you start talking that's real money for them.
Right.
And then if that doesn't do well, that affects stock prices, whatever. It's really about putting the money to the marketing spend for these movies. And that's for a small movie release. The marketing spend for these movies is so massive that you have to make so much money back.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's so what scary. Like, and it's sad, but like Soderbergh like just tried to change it with Logan Lucky, because he's like the marketing spends for these movies are ridiculous.
And that's outrageous. What's holding back those mid-range movies, adult films. They're not getting made as, you know, $40-50 million movies, because then you got to spend another $50 million to market, and suddenly you have to make blockbuster type money.
Well, also, unfortunately, the other side of it is that it's just too – there are too many reasons for people to leave their house.
I know. Well, that's the other problem.
Because of Netflix. And
yeah. No, it is. No, it is. It's weird.
You're like, I'll just – well, there are some things where you go, I want to see that in a theater. I always should see Avatar in a theater. And other stuff, you're like, yeah, that drama about the family with the kid that runs away, I could probably watch that at home. I don't know if I need to see that on a big screen.
It's true. It's true. And then there's stuff like Blade Runner, which is like you should see this on a big screen, and then people still don't go to see it. So I don't know. It's a little depressing.
But with Stranger Things, you don't even – I don't know. Maybe they tell you in private, but Netflix doesn't really ever tell anyone like who's watching what, how many people
they
are watching what.
Don't, it is true that they you know, swear in my life, they don't tell us anything about the viewer.
How do you know? Was there any point where you go, I think this is a hit show, but I don't know?
No, you just start. You can only really go off of social media, which I don't even know how trustworthy that is. You know, because and you just start to get a sense of how that's what you know. You start to see it ripple across pop culture. You know, it's like you see Amy Schumer make a joke about it, and people laugh, and you're like, okay, well, like they got the joke. So,
or if you get an Emmy or something, you probably know. Or
that's like nice industry recognition. It definitely was not intended as an award show. I can tell you that. That Netflix was not expecting that. So you start to feel it out, and you're like, okay, I think, you know. And then, we went to Comic-Con, and it was sort of it is surprising. It's such a small group of people that are making the show and reacting to the show, and I think that maybe is one of the nice things. You don't have a lot of people's fingerprints on it. I mean, so it's like we deal with three executives at Netflix, and then they're their higher-up executives, and you never hear from them. You know, very rarely. I mean, they're involved in a different way, and so it's a very. And then we have two producers. So in total, it's five people outside of us and our writers who are involved in sort of the big decisions. And I think that there's something really. There's something that feels very intimate about it. And I think that, and for the most part, we're left alone. And that is one of the nice things about TV, though. I think because movies cost so much money and they're so short. That like you can have a studio's fingerprints over every line and every page.
Oh yeah.
And they don't have even if they wanted to Netflix, which they don't. But even if they wanted to, they'd be unable to because we have too much. It's too much content. We're turning out the scripts. They would tell you too late, which is true. But we finish everything. You know, it takes us a while. You know, it's probably like 3 weeks of scripts. There's not a lot of time. which is a little scary. There's very little safety net. So if we bomb on a script, it's kind of, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, because everyone has to move so fast, there's no time to sort of overthink or overanalyze. You have to go. And I like that about it. And then when they do have a note, or, you know, when they do have notes, obviously, you know, they're usually very, very smart.
Well, I wonder, because when we're talking about films or traditional television, it's like they bring a lot of market research in before and go, okay, we got to do this and we got to make this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, but it seems like, you know, Netflix, a place like Netflix will go, well, the shows are the research. It's like we just make them. And then we just see what people are responding to, as opposed to trying to come in with all this pre-programmed.
I hadn't thought about it. That's true. That's very true. And then they do research, like they do, like in terms of the thumbnails or the image you see for each show. They see who's clicking on which image, but you're right. They do that all after the show's been released. There's no testing. There was never any testing of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And that's something.
God,
that
you're
is
so lucky
in a studio,
because you don't know, they could have, like, you know, they could have gone to a mall like in Nebraska and just pulled like 40 random people in a mall, none of whom could have given a shit about any of the themes or anything. And we're like, oh well, this is not. It turns out no one cares about this. They're like, well, the 40 people you asked that you pulled out of, you know, Hot Topic or whatever. Actually, if you pull them out of Hot Topic, they probably would have liked it. But anyway, whatever else. By, you know, whatever it is.
Well, my problem, I mean, we've been involved a little bit with studio testing, but you get, you know, the executives or studios, they can kind of read what they want out, out of that testing and force you to do things you don't want to do.
And it's that classic thing, you know, when you're in school where you're like, you know, the teacher asks a question and one person raises, you know, their hand about, do you like this? And then everyone else raises their hand. It's like they just follow the leader.
Right.
So it's a little, it's like, who doesn't like this character? And then one person raises their hand and then suddenly the whole row does. Well, and it's like, you liked him.
Not only that,
you're following
him. You know, someone just was standing in a food court for 45 minutes because they couldn't decide if they wanted a hot dog on a stick or Orange Julius. And then all of a sudden someone puts them down in front of a show and says, I want your criticism. Well, educated corn dog consumer, you know, it's like all of a sudden they become the most knowledgeable because they just are like, oh, someone's asking me my opinion.
Exactly.
I'm going to find problems with this because they're asking me to find problems with it.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
It's just such a backwards, fucked up way to, you know, and I feel like so many times in the industry when creators are empowered to carry out their vision in a mostly unsullied way, it's like it fucking works, you know. But then the takeaway is going to be, oh, I guess America just wants to see a bunch of kids playing a board game. We're like, no, they just wanted that story. It's like, they don't need to see kids playing a game with a dimensional demon.
Yeah.
Like, they just need good stories that are, you know, well thought out and authentic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They'll learn all the wrong lessons. It's like, you know, when like Deadpool became a big thing, it was like, oh well, we just, you know, it's the R-rated.
Right.
R-rated superhero now. And it's like, no, it's actually because this is a very personal, unique take on on this. Or same with with Logan. I don't know. They tried to figure it out.
Well, you're taking the wrong lessons from it. It was like, that was a passion project for those people. And it shows. And that's the end of the story. And I think that's what it is. It's not because people wanted an R-rated superhero movie. If you make a bad R-rated superhero movie, it's going to do poorly.
Right.
I mean, it's nothing to do with the rating.
It's like having it's almost like you have Lieutenant Commander Data on the bridge, and the play happens, and he tells you all the things about the play about why it must have worked. And it's like, okay, those are all the sort of artificial, I guess, superficial reasons of connection points that you might be able to piece together, but you know, there's just still that sort of that soul quality to it that you can't put in a cell on a spreadsheet, you know? It's just harder to go, well, let's just hire creative people. Like, okay, well, find them, you know?
But the thing is, they want to make it scientific because there's so much money on the line.
Right, of
course. So they want to figure out...
it's fired. They're like, well, the research said...
Right, we did everything right, you're supposed to. But I agree. No, but Netflix, that is their philosophy, at least as it was told to me, is that they find people who they believe in and they take a bet on. They bet on them, which is sort of what the studio system did in the 70s when they were like, oh, they realized that's when that resulted in some of the best movies, you know, in Hollywood history, which is like, oh, we don't know what people want, so we're just going to trust.
Are you guys
trust these filmmakers?
Are you just going to focus on this, or are you going to, is there going to be like a Duffer Brothers umbrella corporation that's going to start putting out a lot of other Duffer Brothers-esque.
To the frustration of many, we're like we're unable to focus on anything but this.
I think it's the idea of producing, finding people that you're passionate about and helping them get something
better. That is right. You
is a nice
that.
One. I think that's a nice idea. The only thing we're struggling with is just Stranger Things. We're directing, in the case of season 2 and probably season 3, you're directing 4 hours on top of writing 8 to 9 hours of content on top of editing that stuff and getting it produced and released as close to a year as you can. And you know, it just becomes all consuming. So, and we don't want to shortchange it. And we don't want to shortchange something else.
We're trying to find efficiencies, but I think the efficiencies are just going to provide us like weekends, potentially.
Right.
Like it's not like going to open up this whole other avenue for us to develop.
I think
other
we
stuff.
Could, if we didn't do the directing is just that, but that's our passion. That's what we love. We're only writing in
that's
order
the reward.
To that's the reward. We're only writing, and we've only ever written to just get to the point where we can be directing. So that's the thing we don't want to
give up. And how
do
you work together?
I think well, we make all of our decisions, I think, in the writing stage. So that's when we fight, and then and then we write in a way that we both know what that means for the shots and stuff, usually. And then so usually then when you get on set, it just becomes about executing.
Yeah, no, but you must have like there must be familiar, consistent fights that you've had since you were toddlers.
Oh,
that manifest themselves in
I'm sure.
much more academic
I'm
ways
trying to think.
When you're like.
I don't know.
Scripts are on a
yeah,
set.
We probably should like be seeing a therapist because we have such a close working relationship.
But don't you have some sort of weird twin meld?
Oh yeah,
isn't
yeah yeah? We have a really close twin meld. I mean, even like when we were really we started telling stories, like make believe stuff, like all kids do when we were really really young. I mean, like preschool. And so I can't remember a time when we weren't telling stories together. But I think I'm trying to figure like what is our common fight. I don't know. I would say that because it gets so complicated. I mean, obviously, when you're writing a script, you want it to at the end of the day to seem as simple as possible. And so, and oftentimes it's just way too complicated and it's kind of a mess. So usually somebody is wrong about something because it's so and then we get in a fight about that.
Yeah,
and then someone and I don't know who's wrong. No one's going to admit someone's wrong more than the other. I would say it. So I'm going to be political and say it's 50-50.
That's a safe answer.
But no, I would say I don't know. Ross is.
What are you saying? You're going to get in trouble.
I'm going to get in trouble. Well, I was going to say Ross. He's always been a bit more focused on the writing aspect of it. I'm a little better, more focused in post. Can you agree on that?
It's a little more complicated, I would say.
Okay, Ross is hearing you, but I just feel like he's not.
This is why we need to go see somebody.
Co-signing the agreement that you're laying out before him. So what we're going to do is this was a really good session, and we're going to meet again next week. I don't normally take on new clients, especially two at a time who are twins, but. But I really believe that you guys are going to work this out. I really feel like it's going to work out.
It's really sad when you hear about brotherships or twinships or where they fall. Like the Hughes brothers had a big falling out.
Yeah, sure.
And that's that pains me. That hurts me.
I don't know if they had a falling out. We just know that they don't work together anymore.
I bet they had a falling
out. Wachowski's right. They don't work together anymore.
Oh, they don't?
No, I don't think they – I don't know. That's complicated. I'm not sure that that's a falling out that they had. But it hurt. It's hard for me to imagine doing it. Going flying solo, I guess. That would be a disaster.
Well, it's not anything you have to worry about anytime in the near future.
I don't think so. So
well, because you're moving so fast, I mean, everybody, it's important to be aware that everybody is capable of having really terrible ideas. And so we block those really bad ideas. So Ross provides a really nice safe. We provide nice safety nets for each other.
I know, but it's what's so scary, especially on a show like this, which can really be about anything.
Yeah,
it's how do you weed out when you get so close to something? Sometimes it's really hard to tell.
Well,
I'm too close to this. Is this bad or is this good or am I?
Yeah,
I don't have the right.
Well, but that's why the other day, like now, even if we did a movie, I would bring a room, a writer's room, because like. Of like four other super nerds and like really smart people, and they help a lot. And so, like, before this, I was like, I don't need a room. I don't understand the point of this. I mean, Wayward Pines, there was no room. And so, but now I've fallen in love with it because you have, because we think so much alike. And we've seen all the same exact movies, and our life experiences are very, very similar. So it's really great to have other people in the room with slightly, even if they love a lot of the same stuff that we love, they have different life experience and different point of views, and they really help get us out of so many ruts.
Were you D&D guys?
No, weirdly, no. I mean, we did play some Dungeons & Dragons growing up. We were more into Magic the Gathering.
Got it.
Was our, but, you know, that was not around in 83. So,
no.
But we did play D&D. We just weren't huge D&D.
But I'm glad,
guys.
Like, board games, I feel like, are having, like, a bit of a resurgence in the past,
absolutely.
Like, 10 years. But,
yeah,
but
absolutely.
Even late, like, people who I never would thought would be playing board games. We'll play board games. I can get to play board games now.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we were running so fast at, you know, having played D&D from the beginning, we were running so fast toward video games of like, oh, the video games are
yeah.
gonna.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then at a certain point, like, you know, it was really nice to sit in front of other human beings.
Yes. Well,
and
I don't
have
get
a
the,
shared.
To me,
experience.
I don't get the. I love video games. I do not get the online video game experience. Like, because I love, like, when I even played, like, GoldenEye or whatever, it's like the best experiences I had playing games were when I had other people with me in the room.
Yeah.
And that's the same reason I love board games, because you got people. You know, I don't want to talk to someone on an intercom or a walkie, whatever. Someone who lives in, you know, Oklahoma. I want to play with my friends in the room, and I think that's why board games are, like, coming back in such a big way. So it'd be really cool to have. I know they put like out a Stranger Things Monopoly thing, but I really think it'd be cool to have a proper board game.
Fantastic. I feel like it's time for a Stranger Things board game.
I know. I just played. I played this game, Defenders of the Realm, from the 80s, which is like very D&D like. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's really cool. But I was like, that would be a good. It's cooperative based. Because I'm kind of into these like cooperative based games now. Like, have you played Pandemic?
No, but I've heard about it.
But you got
to
do Pandemic.
But these games I have to be very careful of.
Why?
Because they'll fucking eat my life.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, Pandemic is, to me, revolutionary because it's like a game that you play over the, like, well, I didn't play it over, but you're supposed to play it like over the course of the year. And the every time you play, it changes the board, however the game works. Like, turns out for you, it's like scars the board. You tear up cards. You put stickers on the board that fundamentally change the game for the next time. So it's like it is constantly evolving, which is really cool. But then I play the game Defenders of the Realm, and I was like, and I realized how much like Stranger Things took from a lot of stuff before it, how much Pandemic had taken from this Defenders of the Realm game, which is very D&D like, but you're working with other people to defeat these monsters. It's really cool. But I mean, there's so many great games. It's like a whole other world I've discovered.
Well, are they actually playing D&D in Stranger Things, or is it actually
D&D? It actually is D&D, yeah.
Got it. Okay, that's cool.
It is, yeah. And D&D, they've been really cool. There's been no rights issues.
No, they've been great.
Well, I'm sure they probably don't mind at all.
I guess not. I haven't heard.
Hey, we're really upset. We really didn't want that many people to remember. About, you know.
I think Eggos was more a surprise for all than anybody else.
Did you see my Halloween costume from last year?
Uh-uh.
Oh. I was
an echo?
No, I had. I'll have to pull it up and show it to you because I don't. If I tell you what it is,
okay,
then it's better that it's maybe it's worse that you see it, but it's I'll show it to you when we're done with the podcast. But the picture was taken right out here just to give you some context
yeah.
for. This, but while I'll set the scene, and then I'll show you the picture. But so when is I know the premiere is Thursday. Does it drop on Netflix Friday?
I guess it's midnight. Yeah,
right.
It's midnight. So yeah,
although you should clear midnight Pacific time.
That's so, right. So it'd be 3 a.m. for people on the East Coast,
which sucks if you're on the East Coast, but it is what it is.
But if you're an insomniac, good for you.
Yeah, exactly.
You got something to do at 3 a.m.
That's right. No, I mean, I remember even season one just being shocked at. I remember waking up Friday morning and just seeing the people finish the show, which was it just blew my mind
before it was anything.
Yeah, no one knew anything about it, and it was amazing that people had already finished it.
But that is kind of funny that you said that. You're sort of like. Yeah, spent a lot of time on that.
Spent a lot of time, and they're done.
Yeah,
they're like, done. But you know what? That's what a movie is the same way. I mean, like, it's like, you know, you spend 2 years, you know, you make a Star Wars movie, that's 2 years of your life.
No, that's
you've
true.
Got no at week, least. No, at least. You got probably no three. Weekends. You're going to, you almost die when you're at the end of it, probably. I'm just imagining how Rian Johnson is feeling right now. But it's like, and then people watch it in one sitting.
And then it's just all
but
done.
But millions and millions. At least when you make a Star Wars movie, you're not worried about whether or not people are going to watch it.
No.
You know, a lot of people spend 2 years on something and not, no one will watch it.
But there was a time when they were making Star Wars movies, they were like, well, I don't know, you know, before Force Awakens came out, they didn't know, they knew
they spent $4 billion acquiring they had an idea. That seems like a deal to me, doesn't it?
I mean,
$4 billion,
it really does, especially because Instagram cost $1 billion, so you're like, right, so Star Wars is only worth 4 Instagrams? Like,
I don't know. I mean, think about the merchandise alone.
No, but it's not just Star Wars. They also have Indiana Jones. Oh,
oh
that's
my
amazing.
God. That is incredible.
I found the picture.
That is incredible.
You really used a lot of powers. There's a lot of blood.
Yeah, there's a lot of blood.
Blood.
I've used... I've,
it's like
I've
the double...
exhausted
the double
a lot
nostril.
Of my powers. I went on a bender the night before. A power bender. And yeah, I got all hopped up on Eggos. Awesome. Yeah, this was my costume on At Midnight last year.
That's incredible. Wow.
But I was 11 for anyone who's listening. It's on Twitter. It's on Instagram. You can find it. Are you guys going to celebrate Halloween in any particular fun way?
No,
because I never dress up, which is I guess people consider it lame, but I was like, I'm like too self-conscious, so I always just watch at least, you know, a couple scary movies, great scary movies. I'll find people who haven't seen something and make them watch it
and show it to them.
Yeah,
I'm having some friends over tonight who've never seen Christine, so we're gonna show them Christine.
I haven't done Christine in a while.
It's fun.
It holds up.
That's a good movie. A lot of people haven't seen Christine.
I mean, if someone liked Stranger Things, seeing, like, you see the seeds of that style of filmmaking in Christine. Like, Christine is, like, super 80s.
Yeah.
And Keith Gordon is a director. Yeah. The guy who, you know, who plays the lead character is a director now.
Oh, weird.
But the seeds of it, just that, what is that vibe? Do you have any idea what that aesthetic and that vibe is? I don't know how to describe it, but it's just so... It's just so 80s. I mean, like, literally everything about it. I guess it's just because it was, like, the dawn of synthesized music and the digital. Like, it was just – the technology was just starting to fold in.
I guess. I don't know what it is, but it was – you know, we grew up with it.
But it's a mix of – that's what it is. It's a mix of analog and then, you know, with the digital – it's with that synthesizer sound is just, I don't know.
It's the best.
It's the best. It's my favorite thing.
I mean, you should release a whole Stranger Things album at this point.
And it works on anything, because when we did like a mock trailer to sell the show in the first place to Netflix, like we had E.T. and stuff in there, but we had like John Carpenter, classic John Carpenter music over it. Works over E.T. Just makes it a little scarier. It works really well.
Everyone knows it's easy to turn E.T. into a horror movie.
It is.
It scarred a lot. I mean, it messed it. I didn't like actually watching E.T. much as a kid because it really disturbed me. I mean, all the stuff when he's dying and
Elliot's dying.
It's dying,
like, you know,
it's a lot.
It is a lot. And the people in the suits he's just this little fucking turkey, like in a in a freezer. It's sad.
It's sad and just upsetting.
And also, you know, like single mom, like fucked up family.
Yeah,
it's like
dark.
It's dark and a bummer. And then somehow at the end, you're like, he's going home. You know, like somehow at the end.
That music, man.
It is the music.
But then I read, I didn't know this fact about E.T. was that there was a scene, a coda, after the spaceship takes off where they're playing D&D again. They're playing D&D like they were at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, shit.
At the very end. And then the camera... moves up and it finds like a little like antenna, like he's still potentially communicating with E.T. And they cut it because you can't, the power of that ending on his face with it.
When
you
they
know,
just
on
cut
Elliot's
out on
face.
That
no,
every
when you
time
cut out, no,
me.
But it is.
I mean, Goosebumps thing, you meant?
I know,
now.
But it's a very bold, if you think about it, it is a very bold, non traditional ending. It just really cuts out at the highest. Usually a movie will kind of let you out, down.
But that's just
and
like,
that just it ends at the highest emotional peak.
There's a coda where Nick Fury shows up and he's like, "All right, we gotta go get that guy."
Right now, that would be at the end of the credits.
Well, that
of E.T.
That's the worst. But that's almost. I mean, it was fun for a while, the coda. But the problem is, it's like usually you wait, you have to pee like halfway through a movie.
Yeah.
Like, well, now I'm going into the third act, so I feel like I can't miss anything. And you're like, how much of the fucking credits do I have to... I really have to pee.
They just do like four different things now in the credits. It's crazy. I'm like, is it that the last one? Is there another one?
This is happening as credits are getting longer and longer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like more and more visual effects artists are working on it.
But it gets people to sit through the credits, which is a new thing.
Listen, I respect it. I just need...
Netflix won't let you sit through any credits.
No, it's true.
You have to make an effort to watch the credits. That annoys me, actually.
Well, I roll Twilight Zone at night, you know? Yeah. Sometimes when I'm trying to fall asleep, I'll roll Twilight Zone. And it jumps past the credits, and I'm like, no, I want the opening credits because I need that song. That's part of the...
I want the credits. I want the opening titles, and I want the credits because I want to... I think it's important. It lets you have time to kind of like...
Maybe that's an option. Is that an option? Can you talk to someone at Netflix? People want to see this all the time. Can you talk to someone?
You're right.
No, I can't.
It should be a deep cut option. So if you actually do care about
it. I thought you have to hit a button, though.
I thought you have to hit skip the main title. You have to hit the skip intro. It won't automatically do it anymore.
You're saying... On Twilight Zone,
it automatically skips the intro.
When you're watching, rolling episodes, it just like
I talked
15 seconds in.
Maybe it's new.
Something's wrong with mine because Mindhunter doesn't even giving me the option to skip the intro.
It doesn't mutt for me either.
What is that?
I don't know.
Did David Fincher pull some strings?
Fincher might have pulled some strings.
Is what happens. Someone like David Fincher does that, then they have people like us whining.
Let's get Ted Sarandos on the phone. We're gonna tell him some of our concerns.
What's going on?
He's probably not doing.
Why do I have a skip titles? You don't like my titles, Ted?
Ted, I want to hear the fucking Twilight Zone theme.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. We did purposely keep it. I was like, I want to keep it 45 seconds because I felt like that. When these title sequences do hit a minute and a half or, God forbid, longer.
Right.
I do really want to skip if you're watching multiple in a row.
Just for fun. Just for fun. Are you still shooting? Oh, you're already done.
Yeah.
But just for fun, maybe in season three, just shoot the extended 80s sitcom version of the Stranger Things opening where it tells the whole story in the intro. It just gives you the whole, well, they were playing games down in the bay. You know, it's like it gives you the whole, like, Friday night, you know.
We need
ABC.
Ideas. I mean, this is good. I'll take this back into the...
Writers
room.
I'm so pleased I was able to help. Thank you for being here. It was really great to meet you guys.
Man.
Congratulations on the show. I'm so excited for it to come back and come back for season three.
All right.
Oh,
no,
we'd
love to.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus. Explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries, and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.